Welcome back to the Mediocre Alaskan Podcast. Here with Chad Riker, the man behind Backcountry Rookies Podcast. How's it going, man?
It is going really, really well. I appreciate you calling me, man.
I've been listening to your part of your podcast is the stories from the season. And It's just so fun to listen to just the diversity of stuff that that you have going on and the different guests that you have going on. As you're listening to these things, is it kind of tough to just hear about all these exciting things that other people are doing?
Man, I'll tell you what, it is so hard because all of the stories are just so good, man. And I hear way more stories than what I record. I don't have time to record all of the stories that I could, you know, but it is tough because I hear guys hunting barbed sheep and I've got you over there. You're hunting bears and mountain goats, all kinds of cool stuff in Alaska. It's just cool, man, to hear it.
It's pretty motivating to be around people and hear other people doing those things. And you kind of see yourself as part of that community. So you think, all right, This is what we're doing. So let's do this. Let's find the next adventure for myself. But there are certain things that you just can't do or haven't done. Is there anything that's kind of stuck out as like, oh my gosh, how have I not done that yet? I have to make this happen.
Well, elk for me is that right? Like I've killed deer before, and now I killed an antelope and coos deer. Like I've hunted some Texas hogs. I've hunted lots of fun stuff, but I still haven't killed an elk. So every time I hear somebody's elk story, I get the itch. And I think, I can't remember if you and I talked about it or not, but I actually had an elk tag this year that I turned back in. And so I didn't end up being able to go on an elk hunt. And now every time I hear an elk story, I'm just like, crap, man, I could have had that tag, or I did have that tag and I turned it back. But
yeah,
time is a factor, man. Time is a commodity that I just don't, it's one that I just can't get enough of. And that tag had to go for that reason. So,
yeah, that's such a tough one because you don't want to be part of that, well, it must be nice, you know, group. Like take Corey Jacobson, for example. You know, I'm sure he gets a lot of flack for, you know, that's kind of what his job is. That's what he does. He goes and he goes on these hunts. And so I'm sure a lot of people are like, well, it must be nice if you can just draw these tags and you can just travel and make all these hunts happen. It's like, well.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the guy, he's getting paid for that, right? Yeah. Like, I'm not getting paid to go hunt.
Yeah.
If I was, I would be in the woods from the end of August until January.
Yeah.
But I don't get paid for that. I've got a regular job and I got to earn my vacation time. And it's just like everybody else. You're the same way, so there's struggles. And I think it's really, really easy to get wrapped up in the success of others and to be able to look at that and say, well, if I just only had that much time, well, you don't, right? Yeah. So enjoy what you got. Enjoy the hunts that you get and the time that you do have and go with it.
Yeah. And the thing too about Corey is like, he's not some random guy who hunted elk twice and then all of a sudden he has a show. You know, he didn't throw money at it. I mean, he put a lot of time and expertise at it and then made that happen. And did you listen to his recap of his hunt up here?
I haven't yet. And the only reason is because him and I talked about getting him on for his stories from the season. And I keep thinking that I kind of want it to be a surprise. But I've heard that podcast was just fantastic. So I may have to just listen to it. And if it's as good as what people are saying, then I may not even have him on because it sounds like they told the story pretty good.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about it. Like a lot of people tell their stories on certain podcasts. So when I have them on mine, I don't necessarily want the entire story recap. I kind of want some different angles. Now that I've heard the story, ask some other questions of things that maybe wasn't asked or wasn't included. So I think there's kind of an advantage to knowing the story and then knowing what your listeners need to know for context and recap. So it's a great story in that it's authentic Alaska, but it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what people hear because it's the same story, but in different ears, you know, people are going
to
be,
well, I would like to hear it from your perspective. Hopefully you guys have plans for him to go on your show.
He came on in July, I think. And then we kind of started talking back and forth after that because he'd drawn the tag and he came up here. And then when it was over, I had a chance to meet him, which is great. I mean, he's like, I assumed that he would be the type of person in person that was just going to be nice guy, totally ordinary. Then after meeting him, I was like, oh yeah, 100%. He, Donnie John for sure. And so it was like listening to the podcast and showing the, and watching the posts and reading the posts that he made about it. He really made it authentic and it was super nice. Yeah. And the danger I think might be glossed over by some people. And I think he was every bit, he was prepared. The whole group was, and this is a serious thing. This isn't just whatever. This isn't, you know, not all that different. Some people were making comments about, oh, I'm sure it's not all that different. You're trying to hype it up. And it really is. When you're in some of these areas, it's not as simple as someone driving out and rescuing you. You know, this is Coast Guard. This is uninhabited islands. This is rural. This is, things get really serious very quick. And so it was nice that he didn't have this sort of arrogant, I conquered Alaska, I got this awesome elk in Alaska. He was like, dude, this was terrible. I probably wouldn't do it again. In fact, I'm pretty sure that I wouldn't do it again. And it'll just be interesting to see if people listen to that and think, you know what, if I might not be cut out for this. And so I'm not going to put in for this draw that if I do draw, I'm either going to cower at the logistical things that have to come to fruition in order for me to make this happen. And then I have to get the weather right. Cause that's another concern is that, you know, people draw some tags up here that are tough to get. And since we don't have preference points, it's not just a saving thing. Some people will draw a tag and then can't use it. And some people put in for tags and have no intention of using them, which is, I don't know, bothersome, but, so I guess short story long is I think he represented the hunt very well and the potential for Alaska very, very well. You can have unbelievably incredible experiences, but things can go south very, very quickly. And that margin for error is very, very thin. It's not as simple as just hiking out to a road and finding someone. It is, it's rough, but.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. I guess I'm going to go ahead and listen to it. Now you got me a little bit excited for it. But I do think you said something in your statement there that I like to say on my show a lot. And that's the, I don't remember exactly how you put it, but it's the over glamorization of things. And that doesn't go just for Alaska, man. I see that all the time down here in the lower 48 where it just looks so easy on a 30-minute YouTube video, right? All of the stuff that people are doing in the backcountry, and they make climbing look easy and they make packing out look easy. And I think a lot of times guys aren't ready for it when they go. And, that's one thing I noticed. So hopefully Corey portrayed that well for Alaska.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. There are people who, when they do make that content and they make it look easy, it's almost like they want to make it look easy just to show what a badass they are. And there's nothing wrong with saying that, like, this was grueling. This is like grueling. This isn't, I'm hyping it up so that I look better. Like, this is more than I thought that I had, type situation. I don't think there's anything wrong with giving that honest feedback and then being honest with missing and failures and stuff. Like, that's the sort of content that really can resonate with people. It might not resonate with your ego quite as much, but it's important to have that.
Yeah. One of the stories from the season that I had, I think it was the one after yours, where I had my friend Ryan Johnson on, and he talked about a real struggle that he had last year with a muzzleloader hunt and a primer that wouldn't go off when he had an elk just right there in front of him. And I like it when people share those type of stories, those hardships and the misses and just the difficulties of what people really go through. My buddy, Jason Holiday, I don't know if you're familiar with the Harvest Holiday podcast or not, but he's out of Ohio and he's a really, really humble guy, right? And he says it on his podcast, when he's tried to go elk hunting, the struggles that he's had and how it pushes him off the mountain, then he's come home early. And he talks about all that kind of stuff where, you know, most people are like, oh no, I came off the mountain, there's too much hunting pressure, or Yeah, there's like an excuse all the time, you know, and Jason will just flat out say, man, I wasn't mentally prepared for that. I wasn't physically prepared for it. These are the things I did wrong. And it's really good to hear that type of perspective, I think.
Yeah. At some point, if you aren't honest, then you're going to slip up and the facade or everything is going to crumble. Like if you only shoot huge bulls and everything else, at some point you're going to be exposed. So if you say, yeah, like I was going to be out there, I could have stayed longer. I should have stayed longer, but I really wanted a bacon cheeseburger.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's all I thought about for 2.5 days was a bacon cheeseburger and a big old blizzard.
Yeah.
So, yep, it happens, right?
Cut it short. Yeah. I just pulled up an article from the Anchorage Daily News from last month. There were a man hunting sheep. It was stranded on a 3 by 3 foot ledge on a 40 to 50 degree slope and was unable to move down or up or down the terrain. The Coast Guard said he was stuck in the snow. Hunter activated SOS using in-reach satellite communication device, according to the guard. Troopers said they were notified at 1:25 p.m. And so you have this helicopter that comes out and rescues by lowering you know, the stuff that they have to be hoisted up. So anytime if you put yourself in that situation, then, you know, the people in the helicopter now are, you know, they're trained to do this and they're the best. But, you know, I'm sure they don't want to have to rescue someone on the side of a mountain. They're willing to do that. But, you know, it's putting some things and some people at risk. So,
yeah, happens when you put yourself in that situation. Yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. We were in Colorado a couple of years ago and saw a life flight coming in. There was a couple of ridges over from us. We have no idea what happened, but we saw that going out into the wilderness. And we thought the same thing, like, oh, man, either something real bad happened or somebody was 100% unprepared for what they thought they were going to get into.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's
– yeah.
Yeah. It's something. What do you think makes – a good story? Because you've had a bunch of people on, you've talked about a whole bunch of different stories of a whole bunch of different animals and hunts and people. Is it like a 50-50 balance of the story and the storyteller, or is it like 90% storyteller, 10% story, or what have you noticed about what makes a good story?
Well, I mean, the story has to be there, right? There has to be something that happened, something interesting, I think. But storyteller is a huge, huge part of it. I've done some phone calls ahead of time with people that I thought about having on the show, and like they had a great story. I've read articles that I've seen or seen cool stuff on Instagram, and I thought, man, that's a good story. I'd like to get that on the Stories from the Season or just the podcast or whatever. And I've called people on the phone and been like, there's no way you can't capture an audience in talking to some of these people. And no offense if you listen to this and we've talked on the phone and you weren't invited on the podcast, no offense, please. But there really is storytellers. And then there is people that just are not. There's people that are good at writing stories that can't communicate them. And so I would say it's a good 50-50 balance. Even if there's not a lot there, a lot of depth, understanding that there may not be a lot of depth, like if I'm bringing somebody onto the podcast and it's a short story, there's nothing wrong with a short story. Don't try to make it an hour and, you know, like try to push it because you think it's supposed to be an hour long. If you got a 20-minute story, let's talk for 20 minutes and let's tell a good story. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think that's...
But yeah, I mean, there's got to be, to me, so what I look for when I try to find these stories that I put on the Stories from the Season, I look for something unique or something a little bit different. I've got one of my friends coming on here soon. I'm hoping I record with him this week where he had a Barbary sheep hunt that was just, I've never heard a story like it, right? Like it just blows my mind. And I can't wait to record it. And I know it's not a long story. He was only out for a day hunting hunting barb sheep, and he ended up getting one. But, you know, we'll make it what it is. I just recorded with my friend CJ the other day, and he had a 37-minute elk hunt.
Hmm.
But we, you know, we didn't try to turn it into the story's not going to be longer than the hunt itself, right?
Yeah.
So we only talked for like 20 minutes about it, and that was pre-hunt, scouting, family stuff, you know, all the stuff that goes along with it. We fit it into less than 30 minutes, I think.
Yeah, not everything is crazy and epic, and I think when you try to push something into being something that it's not, that's what ends up being rough. And then also,
you kind of
get the feeling when someone starts to tell a story, like where they start is key, because if they start like the first minute, like of day, you know, pre-hunt day one, it's like, oh my gosh, you're going to go through every hour of every day leading up to the hunt. And then every hour.
Well, it
every
started
day.
In January. Oh, it started in January with my fitness program and diet. Let me tell you how I got in shape and got myself ready. Nope, we're not going down that road.
No.
You know,
I appreciate that people.
To me, go ahead.
Want to include every detail, which is good, but at the same time, there's a lot of details that are not necessarily important to the story. And if they're not important to the story as a listener, you're like, well, what's important and what's not? Is this going to come back later or is it not? And then same thing with writing too, the written word, like everything has got to be purposeful. So if you have a whole bunch of details in the beginning, I'm assuming that you're doing this on purpose because it's going to play in later. And if it doesn't, I'm just confused.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I don't understand that part of that story. Like, why was that even in there? And I'm right there with you. And I just think a good story, but a storyteller is, there's a lot of it, man. And that's the entertainment part of a story, right? And if you can't, like I said, I think there's some people that are great writers and there's some people that are great speakers and there's some people that are fortunate enough to be able to do both. And some people can't. So,
yeah.
But I try to get, this year it's been a little bit different because, so on my series that I do, that Stories from the Season, it's the first year that I did that, I think it was the first year I had the podcast going, and I really didn't know very many people in the industry, in, you know, the hunting, air quote, industry. It was kind of a struggle to find good stories and to have people come on, and now it's almost like, if I had the time, I could record a show a day, no doubt, just because I know so many more people and I see so many more great stories. And I have people sending me stuff on Instagram all the time that are just check out my story kind of a thing. And it's just tough. Like, I just don't have I wish I could share every one of them. I just don't have the time for that.
Yeah. That's kind of the scary thing when you're getting started, because you have to have stories, but you don't have the voice or the reach to be able to track down some of the bigger names. And so you track down some of them might have an awesome story. And so they tell the story and you're good to go. Other times it's, you know, people like don't even respond to the message. Like, I need people to tell stories. I need guests. I need fresh stuff. And it can be tough to find that. Then you get a couple people who, you know, will check their Instagram DMs because there's no other way to contact them, and they get back to you and it's just like, oh, thank you so much for like being on my little podcast here, like thank you for that. And but yeah, it's tough to track some people down.
It is. And I don't know if you remember or not, a few years ago we did this for 2 years, I think, or maybe three. I think we did it for 2 years, where we had the hunting story giveaway contest that we did, and that generated tons and tons of stories. So we had awesome prize packages that we put together. One year, I think we gave away a new bow and like full set of Sitka, just all kinds of stuff. But the idea was to get people to write and, you know, put ideas on paper and just to try to get people to write and tell their story more than just a hashtag on social media or something. Like, I wanted to see the full story, not 1,000 characters or whatever you're limited to.
Yeah.
And we were getting just hundreds of entries to that. And it really generated some great, great stories. And the cool stuff about what that did was it was people that you've never heard of across the industry, right? Not the names, the big names. And it was just real dudes that were out there hunting and just getting it done, you know, and the stories were just great to read. And it was cool. So that was a lot of fun. And we were going to do it again last year, but we had a lot of giveaway stuff that we did. We just did it in a different format last year than trying to do a big giveaway. So we did away with that. Plus it was so, the first year was fine because we got a couple hundred entries or whatever. The second year that we did it, there was six of us that were reading stories, and it literally consumed. It took a lot of time to read through them and sort them and get them ready. And we didn't realize that it was going to take, like, it was very, very time consuming to do that. So we were afraid if we did it a third year, it was just going to be overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just actually talking about that with my journalism kids today, is if you're writing a college application essay, then there's someone there that's has to read it. You hope, unless it's like right before lunch and, you know, they have egg salad sandwiches waiting for them. So they cheat you. But the same sort of thing, I guess, applies, is that you have to be interesting right off the bat in like a real way, not like some sort of weird, start with a thought provoking question. Well, if your question sucks, it doesn't matter. But engaging the reader. Yeah. And if you're telling a story or you're writing it journalistically or whatever, like engaging the reader so it's worth reading. Because I'm sure as you were going through some of those, like, you know, that if the first paragraph is no good, it's not going to get better at paragraph five. And it's definitely not worth your time.
Right.
And so to be able
to there was some that were
journalistic imperative is so important.
Yeah. There were some that were very easy to sort out very quickly. And then, you know, once it got down to the final 20 or something like that, it was tough. It was very tough. So, but yeah, that was a really, really cool way to hear some good stories. And it got us away. So then we always had the winners. There was a rifle winner and an archery winner. And we always had the winners come on to tell their story. And I thought that was a really cool way to engage new people that aren't just the standard guests, right? Like, there's always the same guest. Seems like there's a circuit and people are always on the same shows. Yeah. So I thought that was a really cool way to bring in new people and to hear new stories and introduce new people to different audiences and whatever.
Yeah. It's the people who know how to tell the story, they kind of get that recipe. It's like a guy like Luke Bryan still makes country hits, but then you're like, this song is not good. Like, the lyrics are unbelievably simplistic, but it does not matter because it's Luke Bryan.
Right.
And so it's,
you know, exactly.
What is this thing? But you know it's going to be number one, if not top 10. And there's not one word that's more than three syllables. But that doesn't matter. You know, it's that catchiness. And people telling stories, it's the same sort of thing. You know how to engage the audience. And the best storytellers do that. So there could be very little substance to the story. But there's a way to engage the audience. And those people know it. And so storytelling, like you said, is number one. So it's nice to be able to get some people who might have amazing stories and give them the chance to get better at telling the stories, and so they can learn those things and learn how to read the audience or learn how to get that done. And there's a lot of great stories out there, and I don't know, just a fraction of a fraction are being told.
Oh, no doubt in my mind. This year, so since I've moved to New Mexico, I've really gotten to meet a lot of great hunters and personally meet people. When I lived in Texas, it was a little tougher, right? Because I lived in Texas. I wasn't out west. A little bit harder to meet people that are Western hunters and stuff. And now that I live here, I meet people all the time. And all of them just have cool stories from some time in their life, right? Something really, really neat. I just had a good friend of mine yesterday that was texting me who killed a really nice Barbary sheep. And it's just a neat story, you know. He called me on his way home from, he texted me some pics, and then he called me on the way home and was telling me about it. And I was like, man, it just sounds so cool. And then he sent, you know, like a kill shot of the, in a spotting scope, they were videoing it. It was just a really, really cool deal. I'll probably try to get him on too. He's a nice guy. He helped me out with my antelope hunt a lot.
Yeah. I think so. The best hunters and anglers are the people who, like, no one knows about, because they spend their time doing the thing, not promoting themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, people who can spend their life doing it are going to be really, really good. But,
yeah,
I mean, there's still just that local person who just knows, and they don't have any of the benefit of people giving them spots, giving them, you know, they don't have the resources. They just grind it out and just crush it. Like, dude, you know what the heck's going on. And I think that's especially relevant here in Alaska because you don't have – there's really not – no one lives in Alaska and tells the stories is a big name. You have people – the big names from down south come up to Alaska to do the things. So the people up here that have their moose camp that have had it for 15, 20 years – you know, calling in moose and doing their moose program, like they just know exactly what's going on and they can tell you so much stuff that someone who comes up for once, like they're just not going to know. And there's a lot of those people.
Well, they're not on Instagram though, so nobody cares about them,
so
right?
It doesn't matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter if it's not on Instagram.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what's funny. I met some of these guys that are just great. Great hunters and like I said, cool stories, and they kill bulls every year and all that. And then through talking to them, I've almost gotten to the point where I'm embarrassed to ask them, like, do you have Instagram or Facebook or anything? Because like you'll ask them that and they just look at you like, what? Yeah, I do have Instagram. And then you look at their account and they have like 8 followers and 1 post from 2015 or something, you know. They just don't care about it. And I love to see that. I mean, I also wish that, you know, they would share some of that great information that they have, but to each their own.
Yeah. Timing is so important. If you were able to get in before the necessity of social media, you were able to kind of make the name, get within in the circles, get in that sort of stuff. And now there's so much going out. And I've talked about this with a lot of different people, just that it's such a saturated market. In order to make your name, you have to have some sort of online following, and like you can't just be that one post 8 years old.
Yeah.
You know, that just,
oh yeah, it's gotta be a post a day or more, and needs some kind of cool name.
Yeah.
Cool. Like the Mediocre Alaskan. That's a great name.
I've gone back so many times. That was actually, like yours, Backcountry Rookies, there's just not a lot of podcasts who are just like, yeah, you know what? I'm definitely not an expert and I'm going to own that. I've thought about changing it because there are times where I'm just like, this is not right marketing. Like you have to market, you have to sell yourself and you have to sound, you know, and provide to whatever. I'm like, I can't do that. Like that's not me. Like everything I grew up, I read Bill Heavey and Patrick McManus, like that's who influenced me. There's no way that I can pretend to be an expert if I'm reading those people and I like that. And then just what I do out in the woods, like Cam Haynes is never going to stop his run to go get a burger. So I can't pretend to do that. I can't compete with that. I don't want to either, but yeah.
And people ask me early on, like, well, what are you going to do after 4 or 5 years? Are you still going to call your show and everything the Backcountry Rookies? And I just always said, well, of course, because I think there's always going to be, even 20 years from now, if that was still a name, right, and still a brand you would call it, there's always going to be a Backcountry Rookie somewhere, somebody that's just learning and just getting into it. And so I think it's a good name. It is a little bit limiting, I think, to a point. I always think it's kind of funny because I can, like, there's certain things that I'm not a rookie at, right, that are incorporated into hunting, for example, shooting and reloading and a lot of, like, rifle skills, just lots of things like that, archery and all of that kind of stuff, and I'm nowhere close to a rookie at that stuff. In fact, I've had a lot of training in a lot of rifle skills and shooting, and people just always automatically think, like, if I am in a picture with a rifle, then I've never held a rifle before in my life, you know?
Yeah.
And so there are some things that it does limit a little bit, but I just have learned to, I had the same thoughts that you had, you know, early on, like, well, maybe I should have made it a different name.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, I just really don't care that much, to be honest.
Yeah. It's that idea of, like being a practitioner, which means that you're always practicing, which means that you're never going to reach that level of I'm an expert, I have nothing more to learn. And I think that idea is important. The word mediocre is kind of a hot, you know, oh, don't be mediocre, don't be mediocre. Well, we can also kind of change our definition of what mediocre is. Mediocre is like, you know, I try, I get after it, and I definitely know how to steelhead fish. I definitely know how to fish. Like, I know how to hunt. I know how to do these things. There's no question. But I'm not going to pretend that I'm something that I'm not. And I'm not going to try to, you know, be the expert type person. I think that, and even a guy like, I don't know, like use Corey, I guess, for another example, like that. I mean, he's clearly unbelievably proficient, but he still remains that. He seems like a practitioner. Like, he's just humble. And it's just like he and Donnie are just dudes who are out there having fun and are doing the thing with that same sort of attitude that I think a lot of people who are just getting started, that's the attitude that they have. Like, it's their hunting buddies. It's the hunting camp. And even though you can tell that it's a show and they can tell they're being recorded, there's just a different sort of funness to it that I think didn't exist. Certainly in those like 90s shows when everybody's hunting private land for however much money and I'm the expert.
Right.
I've hunted all these things, even though all I do is drink Diet Cokes and sit in the stand. But
yeah,
it's kind of like that attitude, you know, like I'm willing to be a rookie. I'm willing to learn, you know, I'm willing to battle through being mediocre and get to that next level.
Yeah, I like it. I think that's a super cool name, actually, Mediocre Alaskan. It's one of them that catches me. And there's another one, too. My buddy Lucas Oswald, he has the Publicly Challenged podcast. Mm. And I think that's a really, really cool name, too, because he does a lot of public land stuff and foraging. And I just think that's a catchy name as well, right? There's things I think you can market off of and you can market well. And that's another good one, too, Publicly Challenged.
I was looking at, I think it was, I can't remember what it was, but it's just a working man's bow hunting,
working class bow hunter,
working class bow hunter. Yeah. And like someone had given them grief because, you know, they now have a sponsored show with someone and it's like, well, they can still be that. Like, what we're hoping is as they get bigger and as they grow and as they get better and more successful because they've reached an audience, that they maintain that same attitude. And a lot of times those people do. Like, they still have those humble roots. And so even though it went from a humble podcast with not many followers to something that's successful, hopefully they still transition that same sort of idea and they can still stay connected even though they're bigger. But it's like that band thing, you know, the first album, the band was very popular. And then by album three, after they're big, everyone's calling them sellouts. And sometimes they are, sometimes they're not.
Yeah, sometimes they're not. They're just music changes, time changes, things, everything changes. And you have to go along with the flow sometimes.
Yeah. So it's mid-October here. What's on the schedule for the rest of the year? Like,
I just got back from I just got back from what was supposed to be a deer scouting trip, and the day that I got out there, I found some bear prints, and it turned into a bear hunt, and then back into a deer scouting trip, and back to a bear hunt and scouting trip. Like, I really kind of wish I would have never found those bear tracks, because it really distracted me for the trip. So didn't find a lot of deer and didn't end up finding a bear. So I came home with really kind of an unsuccessful trip. But that's coming up. So the deer hunt is coming up in November, and that's a muzzleloader deer hunt here in New Mexico. So that should be a lot of fun. And then I think, one of my good friends just hit me up the other day, and he's trying to get some cow tags to do a cow elk hunt here in New Mexico, kind of late season. And I think I'm going to go do that. I think I'm going to buy one of those cow tags and go do that hunt with them. That sounds like a lot of fun to me.
Nice.
So yeah, just kind of random, like just, he hit me up out of the blue and said, hey, let's try to get some cows. So we're going to go try that. That's mid-November. And then that's really about it for me. I don't have much. I have coos deer in January, which that I always really look forward to that coos deer hunt. That's a lot of fun. And this year will be a little bit different. Usually it's me. I met a dude. It's kind of a funny story. I met a guy when I was out in Arizona. 3 or 4 years ago or whatever, I had sold him, this guy, a backpack on Rockslide or something like that, you know, some hunting forum. And for whatever reason, he bought it, you know, and then we connected, we talked a couple times, and we met through Backcountry Rookies eventually. Well, I was out coyote hunting, and I was out there for some military training, and on one of my weekends, I was coyote hunting. And he ends up texting me and saying, dude, you're in Arizona, we got to link up. So we ended up linking up for a weekend of coos deer scouting and looking around and hit it off. And we've been Arizona hunting buddies ever since.
That's awesome.
So every year I really look forward to going out there and hanging out with Jeremy and doing that coos deer hunt. But this year's going to be, he's actually coming out to hunt with me on my New Mexico hunt too.
Nice.
And, this year's a little bit unique because my friend Ryan Johnson, who I mentioned earlier, he's coming down from Idaho to hunt with us. And then I'm hoping my friend Jordan, the guy, my partner for Backcountry Rookies, the guy that helps me, I'm hoping he comes out from Texas. So there might be four of us out there hunting this year for coos. Should be a fun camp.
Nice. Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be that's always a really fun hunt. Just kind of relaxing, you know, because it's January, but it's Southern Arizona. Last year, I think it was like 70 degrees when we were out there. So it's just a really nice end of the year or start of the year, however you want to put it.
Yeah,
it's just a real nice transition. But yeah, started out my year with a really cool antelope hunt. That turned out really good. Shot a nice antelope buck, and then I would have had that elk tag too, but I turned that back in. That was Colorado elk tag. So
it goes so fast. It's so frenetic. Like as soon as the king salmon start showing up in like late May, early June up here, it's just fishing, 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 fishing. And then there's no rest while fishing is starting to taper off on the ocean. You have deer season start. And then, uh-huh. I mean, it's just nonstop. And so it is nice where you get to a point where you're just like, okay, all right, let me just take some stock of what's going on here, because it's so fast. And it is nice to just kind of have like a relaxing sort of hunt. But
oh, yeah, it's nice. And I'm not one of those, like, I'm not one of those just diehard hunt or die kind of guys, you know? Like, if I got something cool to do in August, I do it. And September is usually an elk hunt or whatever. This has probably been the busiest year that I've had in the last 4 or 5 years that I've been Western hunting. And that was, I did two scouting trips, one to my deer unit in July, one to my antelope unit in August, and then antelope hunt in August. And then I just did a scouting trip back to my deer unit, what turned into kind of the bear hunt. And then I'll have the deer hunt and then the cow elk. And that to me, there's a couple of weeks break in between everything, right? It's like 4 or 5 days out in the unit hunting. I come home, spend 2 or 3 weeks or whatever, and then I'll go out for another hunt. And to me, that's just like, that's a lot of hunting.
Yeah.
I don't know how guys just, like you were talking about the king salmon and it just rolls in. And I just don't know how some of these guys do it nonstop for 3 months.
Yeah. Well, I think part of the thing is accessibility. Like when we're king salmon fishing in June, it's a 7 to 8 minute run in my boat. And my boat is at the marina, which is a 10 minute walk. So within 20 minutes, I can walk to my boat, be out in fishing for king salmon. So there's not like a long commute or anything like that. And when the silvers are in, it's the same thing. So you got beginning of the summer with kings and then end of the summer with coho salmon, it's all right there. And then yesterday, or actually this weekend, when I went out to look at a game camera, it's a 15 minute drive, and then I'm hiking up this ridge and I found the game camera and I put it up in a spot where I didn't see a lot of old rubs from previous years, and I thought, I don't know. And of course I get a nice archery buck to begin with, and it was 2 days after, because the camera had been out there for 3 months. And so I'm looking at the memory card on Saturday and I see this buck. I think, all right, man, we got 3 months worth of buck parade here. And then like 2 days after that, it's wolf pack. I'm like, oh, great. So I got wolves on there, but still, like, it's not some crazy investment of time to go out there and put up the game cams and do all this sort of stuff. Like, no big deal. I will drive past that spot on the way to do other hiking and stuff. So I've really started to like the scouting part. Not as much, but it's just like another way to just kind of get out and enjoy that. So it kind of takes some of the pressure off the actual hunting, because I can still get enjoyment out of just going out there, looking around, glassing, you know, figuring out, being a detective. That piece of hunting is also so, so very fun.
Yeah. And I would definitely agree with that. I may take a day run up to this unit where we're going to get these elk cow tags and, you know, just spend a day up there looking around and seeing what's up there. And then it's bear season. So if a bear happened, well, I'll take a rifle with me. And if a bear shows up, then I'll shoot a bear. But I don't even know if that's going to happen. We'll see. I'll probably get up there.
Yeah.
Just for a day. But yeah, it does get really busy, man. And it just kind of goes. This is the first year my wife has really been exposed to me being gone multiple different trips. In the past, it's always been 2 weeks or usually about 10 days for a Colorado elk tag, you know, a couple days to drive out there from Texas and 7-8-ish days of hunting and then home. Right. And then January, and that's usually September. And then January, I would go to Arizona and do the coos deer hunt. But this has been our first full year here in New Mexico. So there is so much more opportunity. And I would probably go a lot more, but there's just a lot of honeydews and things that I do that keep me occupied on the back end. If I had a 15-minute run to be able to go spend 4 or 5 hours in a bear unit somewhere, it would probably be different.
Yeah. Well, that's the trade-off, man. I might be 15 minutes away from good fishing grounds and a half hour away from good hunting grounds, but, you know, we've been punished with some just rainy weather. One of the nicest things about when I was down in Wyoming 2 weeks ago with my wife was just being able to be on a hunt where you can walk through the woods. Like, you can just meander through it, whereas up here, like, you're just fighting brush, and it's so thick and so dense and so wet. So, and even though it was cold down there, it wasn't as wet. And even though it sleeted for like a little bit, and it rained for a little bit. And so you can just, oh, it's just so different. So nice to just be able to walk around in a different area. And then I come back up here and just fighting it. So thick, so wet, so just dense. But
you guys had a pretty good hunt, right?
Oh, man, it was awesome. Like, it started off not great. I was down there. Actually, I haven't told the story yet. I'm going to wait for – because Abby's still down there. She's working on her PhD. So we got married in June. Then we were together during the summer when I was down there. But then she's finishing some stuff up and still working on, you know, getting the papers published so she can get her PhD. So the last until I went down there, the last month we'd been apart. So I go down there and we had scouted this elk area and we had game cam footage. And I went through Corey's Elk 101 class and, you know, I was like, okay, pay attention, all this sort of stuff. And so when we would go in to check the game cameras, we would like use all these things as if we were hunting. And, you know, we jumped a couple elk and I'm like, dude, this is going to be unbelievable. And so she actually had an encounter mid-September when rut was just going crazy. And had a 6-point walk right in, but you know, she's hunting by herself. So she had called and then the thing comes in faster than she expected. And it wasn't coming in making any noise. It was just raking. And so it comes in and it's staring right at her. And she had heard it coming in, but she didn't think, okay, it's coming in right now. So I need to get my bow ready and I need to draw. Like, it was just already there. And so she just stood there her bow in her hand and then the thing just took off. And I was like, oh man, that's so — she's telling me the story. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is going to be so good. When I get down there, we're going to do the Corey and Donnie 2-person thing. It's going to be perfect. And so I go down there and we camped every night and we didn't hear one bugle. We were in the same area.
Really?
And there was nothing going on. It was like enough pressure had taken over or something, but we didn't hear one bugle. Not even at night. Like, we're camping in the unit, and not even at night did we hear a bugle. The second to the last night of the season, we're in this tent, and it's right on the edge of this meadow, and we hear just raking. And I wake up. I'm like, oh, dude, yeah, elk raking. And I was like, no, that's a paddle. And it was a moose. Like, okay, cool. And then we hear it on the other side. So on the left side of the tent and the right side of the tent, we hear moose raking and, like, you know, making their noises. And it's like funneling kind of toward us and getting closer and closer and closer. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, the closest opening is about 10 feet from our tent. And the raking is getting closer, closer, closer. And all of a sudden you hear these two paddles just go, and they are right outside the tent. And I was like, should we make a run for it? We need to go to the car. We need to get out of here. So I unzip a little bit and she says, no sudden movements. I'm like, yeah, that's a good point. Cause if we get out of the tent and we're like running for the car for protection, then, you know, they're like, oh, there's a third bull or something like that. It's like the losing bull is getting pushed and you can hear the hooves getting closer and closer to the tent. So, and Abby couldn't find the keys to the car anyway. So we were like backed up on the edge of the tent, which is closest to a tree, and just kind of like just hoping it, like,
yeah,
the back leg doesn't crash in the tent. And so that, like, that was the evening excitement as far as animals go. And then we ended up, I called a little bit, and an elk we figured was responding to it, but was responding quietly just by walking in. And so we came around this little corner, and it was at about 35 yards, but it was somewhat obstructed, didn't have a shot. There was another one that we had at about 65 yards because we were just being quiet. And I did a couple low cow calls, and that was about it, just because we weren't hearing any bugles. So the elk was just like, gosh, just a dismal experience. And then opening day mule deer, she shoots that awesome mule deer. So it was.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say, like, wait a minute, he's talking a lot about elk, and I thought she killed a really nice mule deer.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the funny thing. Like, those hunts can turn so quickly. You know, I went down there with the ideas that, man, we're going to, that six point is going to come back in, and I'm going to call it, and she's going to shoot it with her bow, and it's going to be perfect. But we end up leaving with the memory of her shooting an awesome mule deer with her rifle. And it's like, all right. I mean, that's kind of like
either way. Yeah. Either way.
It's so good. And to, you know, she's a little bit sad to be leaving all the opportunities for hunting in Wyoming. I mean, there's a ton up here in Alaska too, but it's just different, you know, like, and that's kind of the reason why people want to go and do different things and why you're so excited about Arizona coos deer is just, there's different. You know, there's something about those different experiences in different areas, different people that you never get tired of it.
Yeah, for sure. See, that's a good story, man. There's a lot of great story in there, and I'm sure we could probably pick that apart a lot more. But that whole moose encounter is cool, man.
Oh, it was awesome. It was awesome, but it was crazy, and I wish I had, you know, like, pictures, but it was dark and, yeah, I don't know. It was crazy. It's just crazy.
But do you have any audio files of you crying in the corner of your tent?
Yeah. I was laying down there and she was just holding me, telling me it was going to be okay.
Yeah. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. That's funny.
Yeah. It's kind of ruined. Good. Ordinary camping and hiking for me, I guess, to a degree, because if I'm not hiking in somewhere to fish or hiking in somewhere to scout or to hunt, like, it just doesn't have that same feel anymore. And I don't know if I'm, does that make me entitled? Does that make me jaded? What does that make me that I can't just, I don't know. I don't know, man. It's so fun to just be out there. And, like, even for the scouting trips, like, where should I put this game camera? You know, like, you're 3 months before the season starts, but you're trying to figure it out. You're just, you know, how does this world work? You know, the things that are actually living out here, where are they going? Where are they moving? Where should I put this camera? It's so great.
And that, see, that's the level where I'm kind of starting to get to too, is the where I, and I love to spend time by myself when I'm out in the woods. I like to be out there with hunting buddies and stuff, and especially around camp. But those trips where I'm by myself and I just go and scout or do whatever, man, nothing beats that, because you can screw up as bad as you want and there's nobody there to tell you how stupid you are. Yeah. You know, you just learn from that. That, to me, I think I learn a lot more when I'm out there by myself, or when you see the tracks and you see how they're going down to the river and you see the crossings, and, you know, you kind of just, there's little things that you find that I think oftentimes get overlooked. And if you take that moment, you know, to be in the woods and be there, then I learn a lot when I'm running around goofing off by myself.
Yeah. I think it was John Gerak that wrote, you know, if this is paraphrasing, if you're not bad company, then you don't matter. You don't mind being out by yourself. Right. I mean, if you're bad company, yeah, then, yeah, you're not going to want to fish with yourself. You're not going to want to hunt with yourself or do anything with yourself. But, you know, if you can just, you know, go hunt, fish, hike, walk it off by yourself, like, that's such a, yeah, it's good.
I will tell you, after 3 days, I have had some whopper conversations with myself that are just, they're fantastic.
Yeah. Do you, like, I am prone at times to negative self-talk, not from like a depressed sort of perspective, but just like calling myself out for being an idiot. Yeah. As like a reminder.
Oh,
that,
yeah,
hey,
I have to.
That's not you. Okay. You're not this moronic. So stop doing moronic things. You stinking idiot. Like, do you get to that sort of point? Or you're like, hey, it's okay.
Yeah. After a few days, of course, you know, the first day you're always a tough guy, right? Like, oh, whatever. And then by 2 or 3 days, you're starting to do things like that. Any sort of funny interaction that you can have, even if it's with yourself, it's all good, right?
Yeah. I was thinking about that in Wyoming a little bit. I was like, you know, if you were a pioneer, if you would have stayed in, was it Junction City or Jefferson City or whatever, like, you would not have even gotten onto the wagon to head west. Your soft ass would still be back east, because you cannot handle it out here, or you'd be the person, you know, just kind of that historical context of, if I lived somewhere else, where would I be? And just like, okay, that's exaggerating a little bit, but, it is fun to have that time to just kind of decompress and get away.
Yeah. I value that. I really do. I enjoy that time. And last year I had a couple of good weekends to hunt elk by myself and blew some really good opportunities and learned a ton just being out there alone. Like, and those were definitely moments where you turn your back and you walk away and you're just like, that's so stupid. Like, I knew not to do that. And, you know, I knew not to do it because of the Elk 101 course or whatever. And now I actually put it into play and I had it happen to me, and I totally understand why that was stupid.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, some of those moments are good.
Yeah. Well, we're coming up on an hour here, man. What do you got for closing thoughts or topics or anything like that?
Man, I guess closing thoughts is just go outside and enjoy the outdoors, whether it be to do what you do, like hang cameras or find fish or whatever, or spend time alone or do moronic things so you can holler at yourself about doing moronic things, then just get outside and enjoy it. We're starting to open up down here, I guess, down in the lower 48. I definitely have seen a lot more hunters this year than I saw last year. So I think people are getting out and starting to get back to normal.
Cool.
Yeah, that's it, man. We talked about a lot. I don't think I got any closing thoughts.
No, that was good.
The stories from the season series on Backcountry Rookies Podcast. There you go.
Good. What's coming up next, or do you have some things to tease?
On the stories from the season?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a couple things. So I've got a really cool story with Go Hunt that's coming up. They just released a really, really cool video on their YouTube channel. And I had the guy on to kind of talk. It's Chris Porter. He's one of their owners. And I had him come on to talk a little bit more because the videos are only like 15 minutes or whatever. So I got a little bit more context from that. My good friend Shane, who has the New Mexico Pack Burros, I've been really following him quite a bit this year. Him and I are good buddies anyway. He lives outside of Albuquerque. And he's been doing some really cool stuff with his pack burros. And it's really fun to watch that develop. And he bought one from, he bought it from like BLM as a young burro. And he went through the whole process this year of training it on how to pack. And I think he's going to start racing with it. He does a bunch of, they're called pack burro races down here in New Mexico, Colorado, Arizona. And you actually put a pack, panniers and everything on your pack burros, and then you race them. And it dates back to the old mining days when people raced to town to sell their gold that they found. Anyway, so that's coming up, and that's a good story because he really. So we've kind of documented the process of him getting his pack burro, and then I had him on again to talk about training and developing it, and then now I had him on to talk about his elk hunt that he went on and how that pack burro did for the first year and all that stuff. I'm supposed to have Brad Brooks on real soon to talk about his epic Alaska adventure. You might be having him on too.
Oh yeah. I messaged him and said, hey man, I need to make reservations to tell this because we previewed it, so I need to hear about how it turned out. Sounds like, I mean, it's been a slam dunk so far.
Yeah, I'm excited to get him on. We were supposed to record last week, and he texted me whatever Friday maybe and said, hey, I got to go get this rifle zeroed. And then I had a last minute deer hunt come up, and I said, well, okay, go enjoy your, like, don't worry about me, man, go do your thing.
Yeah.
So, and we'll see. I may record a couple of my own stories. I've been debating on whether or not to do my antelope hunt to tell that story. And then we'll see what happens with my deer hunt and that cow elk hunt. That'll be fun. I'll probably do a story on that because that just sounds like fun. My friend Jeremy went out to, he's over there in Arizona, and him and his dad and his wife all had cow tags in Arizona, and they went out and filled all of those. And I just think that's a great hunt, man. Like, nobody really ever talks about that. They just, everybody wants to talk about the big bulls.
Yeah.
And nobody talks about their cow hunts. And he had a really cool, I think they were out for like 6 days and filled three elk tags. So it should be good.
Nice.
But
yeah,
man. I just kind of roll with it. I've got a really good schedule of what I want to record, and I'm about halfway done with all of them for this year. Everything's on schedule unless something just totally wild comes up and there's some story that comes out of the blue, you know, that I really want to record. So,
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. It, man.
Well, great stuff, man. Appreciate what you're doing. Always great talk to you, man. As I said, like, you and a couple other guys, like, I just love staying in touch with you guys, texting, calling, whatnot. It's fun to find people in the industry who are, like, you just BS for an hour and it feels like 20 minutes.
I can't believe an hour went by, actually.
Yeah, I know.
I'm surprised. Yeah, it's been 59 minutes. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a few like that, man, where if they call, I either answer or I look at it and I think, oh boy, I just don't have time for that right now. Like, there's no way I'm going to be able to put that in 5 minutes, you know? So exactly. I'll have to call later. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Right cool. On, dude. Well, thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
Cool. Take care, buddy.
Yep.